Hey, everybody. I don't know if you've met my my son yet. I thought I would introduce him to you. His name is Alexander. He looks just like his father, doesn't he? Yeah, Alexander, he's 2 years old. Anybody else have a two-year-old? Am I the only one that's cursed? No, I'm just kidding. He's 2 years old, and there is no doubt about that, by the way. Anyway, you know, it's funny because just like most two-year-olds, Alex has totally bought into this concept that is loved and embraced by his peers, and that is the concept known as mine. Yeah. Say that with me. Ready? One, two, three. Mine. Yes. Turn to the person next to you. Say mine. Mine. Right? In fact, I finally figured it out. There's like a set of rules that these two-year-olds live by. And I don't know where they get it from, but they just have it. It's a set of rules. You want to know what those rules are? Here they are. Rule number one, if I like it, it's mine. Yeah, that's rule number one. Number two, if it's in my hand, it's mine. Right? If I can take it from you, it's mine. Right? If I had it a little while ago, it's mine. Okay? If it's mine, it must never appear to be yours again. If I'm doing or building something, all the pieces in the world are mine, okay? If it looks just like mine, it's mine. And then like the last of the rules are like, if it's broken, it's yours. It's yours. Mine. Well, thankfully, over time, we start to grow out of that. Most of us start to grow out of that, right? We start to hopefully move beyond the mind stage, at least to some degree, because what happens is we begin to realize that we are not necessarily the king or the queen of the world, right? That the world does not necessarily revolve around you or around me. And so over time, hopefully, our world becomes less and less about us and more about others. And hopefully we find it a little bit easier to start letting go. And yet, at the same time, there are those moments, those times when we discover that there's still a little bit of that mind mentality left inside of us. You know what I'm saying? I think we have those moments where we start to discover, well, maybe there's a little bit more of that in me than I realized. In fact, I think we almost especially discover this in times like this. In the midst of recession, right? In the midst of so many things we're seeing around us, jobs uncertainties and jobs being up in the air, just uncertainty around us everywhere. It's like in these times, there's almost like this tendency we have to just sort of hold on a little bit tighter, right? It's like our natural default is to hold on tighter and squeeze it just a little bit more because we want to remember and hope that it stays ours. There's that tendency. And I think we all feel that. It's not just, it's all of us. I think even those of us who are followers of Jesus, we feel that. And it's almost like what happens is there's this tension that we begin feeling. It's like on one end of the spectrum, we know the joy and we know the calling we have as followers of Jesus to be extremely generous. And yet on the other end of the spectrum, we also are very aware of the instabilities and all the uncertainties that surround us. And so it's like we live in between this tension in our lives. Well, today, what I want to do is I want to take you back in time a little bit to first century AD. And I want to introduce to you, some of you perhaps for the first time, a group of people known as the early church. And this was a group of people who, without a doubt, I think lived in very much the same type of tension between extreme generosity and yet the reality of the struggles, the reality of the uncertainties and the instabilities in their lives. So if you have your Bibles, I want to go to Acts chapter 4. Acts chapter 4. Now, Acts is the story of the early church. And just to give you a little bit of background here, Acts chapter 4, what you find here is you've got two apostles by the name of Peter and John, and they're out preaching, they're declaring the goodness of God, they're healing people. In fact, in Acts 4, we're told about a blind man who has been supernaturally healed, and now he can see, okay? And so they're seeing all these great things happening. In fact, the church just is exploding. 5,000 people at one time come to know Christ. And that doesn't even include women and children. So, I mean, it's a lot of people. I mean, this movement is gaining momentum more and more and more. Well, not everyone likes that. And so there's this group of authorities that decide they're going to arrest Peter and John, and they're going to throw them in jail. And so they get these guys, they throw them in jail, and when they get them there, they ask them this question, which is the wrong question to ask someone who you are already not real happy about what they're saying. But they ask this question: okay, by what power or by whose name do you do all of this by? Wow, wrong question. Because all that does is fuel Peter. And so Peter stands up and he says this. Let me show you. Verse 10. Acts 4, verse 10. Let me clearly state to all of you and to all the people of Israel that he was healed, talking about the blind man, was healed by the powerful name of Jesus Christ the Nazarene, the man you crucified, but whom God raised from the dead. Are there any questions? Verse 12. There is no salvation. There is salvation in no one else. God has given no other name under heaven by which we must be saved. And then listen to this. I love this. Verse 13. The members of the council were amazed when they saw the boldness of Peter and John. Now, I don't know if that's like a good amazed or a bad amazed. I don't think it was good. But anyway, it says, for they could see that they were ordinary men with no special training in the scriptures. Love that. And then it says, they also recognized them as men who had been with Jesus. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, I have to wonder about my life, and maybe you can think about yours. Do people, when they see us, do they see us as people who have been in the presence of Jesus? And so anyway, they end up letting these guys go because, I mean, after all, how do you argue with this man who was blind? Everyone knew he was blind. Now he can see. Hey, how many fingers do I have up? Oh my gosh, you can see. And so like, how can you argue with that? And so Peter and John, they end up getting freed. They return to their fellow believers. And the scriptures tell us that they begin to pray. And they begin to lift their voice to heaven. And the scriptures tell us that the place they were meeting in, it began to shake. And they were all filled with the Holy Spirit, which then just caused their faith to become even stronger and bolder than ever before. I mean, and this is how the church started. I mean, this is the beginning of this amazing movement known as the church. Powerful, isn't it? It's quite a picture that's painted. And see, the result here was not just, you know, you had these people now who were just, you know, were just excited about Jesus. You know, I mean, we're talking like these people's lives were radically changed. I mean, every part of their life was changed. I mean, this was not just a segment of their lives. Their entire lives were transformed by what was happening on the inside of them. And if you keep reading here, I want to show you verse 32, because this is where, I mean, this is like, I think, just the gist of where we're going today. Acts 4, verse 32, this beautiful picture, one of the most, what I think are the most beautiful pictures in the scriptures. Verse 32, all the believers were united in heart and mind, and they felt that what they owned was not their own, so they shared everything they had. Verse 33, the apostles testified powerfully to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's great blessing was upon them all. There were no needy people among them, because those who owned land or houses would sell them and bring the money to the apostles to give to those in need. Man, what a beautiful picture we see here. I mean, of this radically diverse community of people. I mean, Jews, Gentiles, rich, poor, men, women, single people, married people, who were all united in one heart and one voice, and who are all united around this one thing, the one thing that surpasses political agendas, the one thing that surpasses socioeconomic issues, the one thing that surpasses, you know, race issues and all the other things that tend to divide people. They all come together united around this man named Jesus. And their lives were changed because of it. And their lives were transformed. I mean, so much so that they did whatever it took to care for each other and to love each other and to share with each other. I mean, to the point that no one in their community was in need. I mean, I don't think that was like just a slip of the pen. I mean, I think there's so many details you see in Acts that, I mean, when it says that there was no needy people among them, I believe that. No needy people. Man, I tell you, I don't know about you, But to me, this is one of the most beautiful, inspiring, motivating pictures I've ever seen. It's an amazing picture. And yet at the same time, I know that for many of us, we can read things like this in the scriptures, and we come up with all kinds of reasons why there's no way it could happen today, right? Scott, things were different back then. Things were simpler. For Pete's sake, they walked around in tunics. They didn't have cars. They had chariots, right? They had, they didn't have the issues we have today. Things are just more complex now. Things that were nowhere like they are today back then. So, maybe that was just like special grace for them then. Whatever. There's no way. It's just different. Well, not necessarily. No, because these people, listen, they understood a downturned economy. Let me tell you. They understood sickness. They understood things like overcrowdedness. In fact, there's this book that I read a while back. It's this church historian named Rodney Stark. He wrote this book called The Rise of Christianity. He's a historian. And he writes about, one of the things he writes about, goodness gracious, did my chair break? It should be all right, don't you think? All right, let me just fix this real quick. Because I need my chair. Okay, here we go. We're almost done. Hope my wife got to see that. Okay, anyway, what was I saying? Oh yeah, this church historian. And he writes, okay, one of the things he writes about is the population density of this time, back in the day, okay? And he's to help sort of paint a picture of how times were back then, he compares the population density of today to the population density of some of these ancient cities. And he gives us, and one of the examples he uses is numbers from 2006, I believe is when the book was published. And he starts off with showing us the population density of Chicago. And this is residents per acre, okay? And the number for Chicago is 21 residents per acre. Okay, New York City, the number is 37 people, residents per acre. And then he shows us what the population was for these ancient cities like Antioch, which is like the first major city that Christianity spread to. And that number is, get this, 117 people per acre. Imagine that. Same thing with ancient Rome. And so, these cities were a mess. They were like petri dishes of disease and just grossness, right? When people died, there was no mortuary to call. It wasn't, hey, Bartholomew died, can you come and pick him up? No, if Bartholomew died, Bartholomew's going, he's going out on the street or something, right? Infant mortality rate, 50% at this time. That's huge. And another thing he pointed out was when major epidemics would strike at this time in these cities, the conservative estimate is that 25% of the population would die just like that. 25%. Can you imagine that? That's like Aurora's 180,000, right? So that'd be like in Aurora, 180,000, 25%, 40, that's good, huh? 45, I know, I had two other services where I said this. So 45,000 people gone just like that. So, don't let your mind go there. Don't let your mind think, this had some minor discomforts back then, so times are different. No. This was a rough period of time. And yet, amidst all of this, this movement of Jesus is advancing like never before. People are pulling together, rich people, poor people, Jews, Gentiles, you name it, and they're now standing as equals, standing together. And as a result, their lives are just radically changed, so much so that they did whatever it took to care for, to love, and to make sure that each person was provided for, and the result was there were no needy people among them. So here's my question. Why not here? Why not us? Why not now? Listen, what if today, what if today, in 2010, there were to, to, to emerge. And in the midst of this economy, in the midst of the job insecurities, and in the midst, at a time when people are thinking smaller and smaller and smaller, and people are holding on tighter and tighter and tighter. What if in the midst of all of this, there emerged a group of people in Aurora, Illinois, who in the midst of all of the uncertainty, in the midst of all of the challenges, and in the midst of all the reasons why you shouldn't be generous, made the decision that they were going to radically embrace generosity in their lives like never before? What if? I mean, look, let me tell you something. There's a lot of stuff. You could point your finger at the church. People could point their finger for all kinds of reasons. I mean, we've given people a lot of reasons to point their finger, a lot of reasons to point out why we're doing certain things wrong or whatever it is. But can I tell you something? I've never heard of someone criticizing a church because they were just too generous. So, why not now? Why not here? Why not us? See, I mean, imagine you and me for a second as individuals. Imagine us together as a community. Imagine us pouring out such generosity in ways that would make, would be just completely contrary to how everyone else, and people just look at us and go, what is wrong with those people? They're just so generous. I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, wouldn't it be an amazing thing that the people who call the Orchard their church home are the most generous people in our city? I mean, look, that's because that's how life, you talk about experiencing life. I mean, you talk about moving beyond just surviving and just maintaining, and you talk about really living. I mean, this is how you live. This is how I live. So we live, man, I'm telling you, real life is found when we tap into generosity. And see, we see this from the very beginning of the scriptures. I mean, you go to Genesis chapter 1, and immediately what you see, it begins with this beautiful liturgy of abundance, of generosity. You know, it's like the song of praise for the generosity of God, the beauty of God. And then throughout the scriptures, it's like, and here's the great thing about God, see, is like God, we really shouldn't have to have a lot of motivation to be generous because, I mean, just because God is God, right? And he is worthy of us to reflect his glory and his goodness. But then like the Bible, and see, God knows that as humans, we like motivation. So he gives us all these different motivations as to why we should be generous. And one of those is found in Proverbs chapter 11. You should read Proverbs 11 when you have a chance. But verse 17, listen to this. The merciful, kind, and generous man benefits who? Himself, for his deeds return to bless him. Then if you keep reading down into verse 24, let's read this one together, okay? Proverbs 11, 24, ready? The world of the generous gets larger and larger. The world of the stingy gets smaller and smaller. In other words, the more generous I am, and the more of myself that I give away, the more I will have. That's crazy, isn't it? I mean, that just goes completely contrary to what you would think, right? I mean, wouldn't you think that you'd think it'd be the opposite of that, right? It's like the more I keep, the more I will have. But no, what does God say? He says, the more I give, the more I let go of, the more that I give myself away, the more I will have. And see, that's what happens when you and I live a generous life. I mean, think for a second about some of the most generous people you know in your life. I mean, think about people in your life who you know who are extremely generous, okay? First of all, generous people, they see this world differently, don't they? Ever notice that? It's like they see this world differently. They experience life differently. It's almost like while the greedy see the world with limited resources, the generous sees the world with I guess you could say they see it like with this mentality of abundance, don't they? They see it differently. See the greedy, what they do is they take to ensure that they won't be without, but the generous, they give without fear. They give without fear because they're convinced that life is most enjoyed when we're living generously. See, the reason for that, you know why that is? It's because this. Listen, this is so important. It's because they've discovered in their lives that those who give most freely live most fully. I mean, they understand that those who give most freely live most fully. You want to live a full life? Give. Be generous. And the truth is, we all know that, don't we? I mean, I would highly doubt many of you are arguing with what I'm saying. You might not like my shoes or my shirt or my hair or me at all. Hey, that's okay. But you can't argue with what I'm saying, because we all know deep down inside that there's something about generosity. It resonates in all of us. So imagine for just a second. Let's say that, let's say over here on this side of the stage, let's say this right here represents the extreme opposite of generosity, which would be what? Just say it. Greed. That's the answer. Okay, let's say that this is the greed corner right here. The opposite of generosity, greed. Bah, humbug. Okay, and then let's say over here represents extreme generosity, God's generosity, the greatest amount of generosity ever, right? This is God's generosity right here, and over here is greed. Well, here's what I think. I highly doubt, and I know just because most of you here are part of the Orchard and it's just not this kind of place, but I would highly doubt many of us would say, yes, I'm greedy. Yes, do you want to come and hang out with me? No, I would say probably none of us in here would say we're greedy. But here's what I wonder. How many of us would say we are as far over here as we'd like to be? Think about your life. Think about what's happened these last couple of years. As the economy has taken a turn, as uncertainties have increased, or really uncertainty is always there. It's just we become more aware of the uncertainties, right? Because we really aren't as in control as we think we are, but that's a whole other sermon for another time. But think about your life these last couple of years. What direction have you been headed? I mean, have you been headed the direction of God's great generosity? Or while you may not call yourself greedy, have you been headed that direction? Let me tell you something. Here's one thing I've noticed is I've got friends, pastor friends of mine who pastor churches. And I've watched over these last couple of years how before any of the economy took a turn or whatever, they had great big visions to do great big things. And I see their vision now has gone like this. And so you know what that tells me? That tells me that if that happens in churches, if it happens in the way, and don't get me wrong, there's a time where there's wisdom in backing down or making a change or whatever, but how is your mentality? I mean, how what direction have you been walking? Have you been walking this way? Or have you been moving this direction? See, here's what I know. Okay, while none of us will ever be able to match God's amazing generosity, while none of us will ever be able to match that, one thing we can do is to make sure that we're doing whatever we can to make sure we are at least taking one step closer to that at a time. That we're at least moving that direction. So the question is, how do we do that? How do we do that? I mean, how do we embrace the kind of generosity that truly sets us free and that transforms not just our relationship with God, but transforms even our other relationships in life? I mean, because, you know, generosity is so much more than about money, isn't it? You know, I mean, it's so much more about giving money or resources or whatever. I mean, think about for a second relationships. I mean, have you ever known like an emotionally greedy person? Yeah, those are the people. All they do is take, 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 take. And you walk away from that conversation. You walk away from hanging out with them, and you're just like, Calgon, take me away. I'm exhausted. You know what I'm saying? Do you know people like that in your life? Maybe some of you are afraid to raise your hand because that person's sitting next to you right now. But I mean, have you ever known people like that? It's like all they do is take, and they drain you. But then there's other people who I would call like emotionally generous people. And man, those are the people when you're around them, you get filled. Like you're around them and you get energized. It's almost like you feel guilty being around them. Because you leave and you're like, oh my gosh, I feel great. Did I just take from them? What happened here? Because I feel great. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there are certain people that, like, they are intentional. It doesn't mean they feel like doing it. It doesn't mean that it's always convenient for them, but they just understand some things about generosity. They understand some things about giving of themselves. And those are the kind of people, man, those are the kind of people that I would say are emotionally generous. And see, that's the beauty of generosity. I mean, those who give most freely live most fully. So the question is, how do we do that? Well, here's what we're going to do over these next 4 weeks. We're going to explore that question, and we're going to talk about different areas of our lives that we can embrace generosity in. Now, today, I'm not going to dive too deep because it's 12:01. Don't worry. Your roast won't burn, okay? Oh, Jesus, my roast is in the oven. Forget about the roast, okay? Let the roast have a generous time of heat, okay? Listen, so anyway, we're not gonna dive real deep, but I do wanna point out one thing. One thing that's very, very important and that I think is really what's at the core of generosity. I mean, this is the one thing that I think, if you don't get this one thing, if you bypass this one thing, you will not be able to go this direction. You might be able to kind of go like this, but you will never take big strides in this direction, okay? Let me show you what it is. Let's go back to Acts 4 and learn from this early church that we saw, okay? Acts 4, verse 32, all, out of breath. All the believers were united in heart and mind, and they felt that what they owned was not their own. So they shared everything they had. Did you catch that? Okay, all the believers were united in heart and mind. Let's read this next verse together, ready? And they felt that what they owned was not their own. Booyah! Right there. Why were they so generous? They were generous because of what we just read. They felt that what they owned was not their own. That's it. That right there is the starting point for those of us who truly want to live a generous life. I mean, having the realization that everything in our lives, okay, the clothes we wear, the house we live in, the cars that we drive, or if you're like me, one that actually got stranded this morning, it's broken down, sympathy. But anyway, so the cars we try to drive when they work, or the talent that we have, the treasures, the money, the resources, the relationships, all of it belongs to God. Belongs to God. See, this is what the psalmist said when he, in Psalm 24, verse 1, when he said, "The earth is the Lord's, and everything in it, the world and all its people, belong to him." But man, it's easy to forget that, isn't it? Man, I find myself holding on to stuff tight because I start thinking it's mine. I heard this story the other day that I thought was so fitting. There was a woman who was traveling. She was returning. She lived in South Africa. She was returning home, and she was flying through Heathrow Airport in London. And so she had some time to spare. She's in the airport, and she sits down at this table. She's got probably an hour or so, and she decides she wants a snack. So she runs, she gets a package of cookies and a cup of coffee. So she runs, gets a newspaper, she sits down, she opens up her newspaper, and all of a sudden she hears like this rustling sound on the other side of the table. And she takes her paper, and she kind of looks over, and there's a man sitting at the table eating her cookies. Yeah. Eating her cookies. And she was just flabbergasted. Like she's like, I don't even know what to say. But she's like, one thing I got to let this man know right now is that these are my cookies. And so she reached over and she grabbed one of the cookies and she put it in her mouth and she got back to her paper and she's sitting there. All of a sudden she hears that rustling again. She looks again. The man's eating another cookie. So she grabs another cookie and she eats it and she puts her paper back up and she's sitting there and the same thing's happening. Finally, it gets down to the last cookie. She sees this man. He reaches down, takes the last cookie, breaks it in half, slides half across the table to her, puts the other half in his mouth and eats it. And he gets up and he walks away. And she was just like, I cannot believe that just happened. So she's sitting there and all of a sudden she hears on the intercom her flight number, whatever it was. And so she says, all right, I got to go. So she reaches down, she grabs her bag, she opens her bag up to get her passport out, and she looks in her bag, and there is her brand new package of cookies. Yeah. They weren't hers. Imagine that. I mean, think about that. It's like in a moment's time, she realized who the cookies belonged to. Listen. One of the deepest paradigm shifts we can ever make in our lives is coming to the realization and coming to that recognition that all those cookies, they're not ours. They're not ours. All the stuff we have, all the stuff we own, all the stuff we've acquired, all the stuff we've worked so hard for over the years and all that stuff, that's okay to have, but it's recognized. I mean, coming to that realization that none of it is ours and it all belongs to God. And what that means is that I'm not an owner of all this stuff. I'm just a manager. I'm a steward. I'll tell you what, this realization does so much to us once we truly get it, once we really start living this way, once we accept it, and once we begin to declare it in our lives. I mean, Jesus, he one time said this. He said, you'll know the truth, and the truth will make you free. And I think this is one of those truths that sets us free in amazing ways. I mean, when you come to the realization that everything you have in life, it's not yours, it belongs to God, you know what that does? It frees you. It frees you from being a slave to your stuff. It frees you from holding on to things too tight. Because see, what happens is when you understand that everything you have in life belongs to God, what happens when you understand it's not yours is you begin to hold on to things a little lighter than you did before, and which is not always easy to do, especially in our society and our culture that constantly is telling us that we are what we own, right? Like we find our identity in all this stuff that we really shouldn't be finding our identity in, because what happens when that stuff is gone? That we don't even know who we are anymore, right? It's just like putting your identity in someone, in a person. You can't do that. Your identity has to come from within who God is. I mean, your identity has to come from him. Otherwise, if you put it on something temporary, once that temporary thing is gone, you are confused. It's like, who am I? I don't even know who I am anymore. And so, you know, when you look at Acts, and what you see is this group of people who somehow, like, they were able to hold on to this stuff lightly. And it wasn't forced. Look, this was not like some David Koresh cult, Waco, Texas, let's all wear Nikes and have several wives kind of thing, okay? Who would even want that? But I mean, listen. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I'm not totally kidding. I'm just saying. Ladies, you wouldn't want a bunch of husbands either, right? Yeah, okay then. Yeah, okay, I'm going to get out of the hole. Okay. But see, these guys were generous, and this came out of their heart, and because of it had profound implications. See, that's why things like tithing is so powerful in our lives. Giving 10% of what God blesses us with back to him. You know what that is? That is every time you tithe, you know what you're saying? You're saying, God, I recognize that all the stuff you've given me is not mine, it's yours. I mean, you see this from Genesis, and then you see it, Melchizedek in the Old Testament, and then you see it, Jesus affirms it in the New Testament. But then you know what Jesus does? Jesus takes the tithe and goes like this. Boom! Let's go way beyond the tithe. It's like Jesus says, look, tithing, that's training wheels. Okay, that's just the beginning. I mean, if you really want to live, you're going to live generously. I mean, Jesus took it way beyond into radical generosity. And I'll tell you, that the realization of this, it frees us. But you know what else it does? It releases us. Oh man, it releases us to be able to give without reservation. I mean, see, that's why generous people, if you watch generous people, one of the things you discover is that generous people are like, you could say they're like contributors of life. Erwin McManus says this. He said, generous people are the true investors of the human spirit. It's beautiful. But it's like wherever they are, there's more. You know, it's like they, have you ever noticed, like generous people, okay, they're always open-handed, yet they're never empty-handed. Think about that. They're always open-handed, but they're never empty-handed. And see, one of the reasons I think that we're not always as generous as we'd like to be, or sometimes while we find ourselves moving this way slower than we should, is because of fear, right? We get afraid because we think, well, if I'm generous with this, if I give this away, whatever it might be, it could be time, it could be talent, it could be treasure, whatever it is, if I give it, well, then what happens if I need it? And so we're reluctant to let go of stuff. But see, here's the thing. I hope you get this. When you believe that everything you have in life belongs to God, you also then are declaring that he is your source. I mean, think about that for a second. And while God is your source. Now, he may use your job to be your source, right? I mean, to provide for you. He may use some other means to provide for you. But guess what? When God is your source, he's not limited to your job. He's not limited to whatever else is in your life that might bring income or whatever it might be. And I don't know about you, but I would much rather put my hope and trust in a God who is unchanging and who is always the same and who is secure than in all the other stuff that is so uncertain and so unstable. I'll take God over that. So generosity, listen, it frees us. It releases us. But you know what else it does? This is the beauty of it all right here. It conforms us to being more like God. It conforms us. I mean, because you know what? I mean, when it makes us more like our Creator. We reflect who he is. And it's like when we become generous, we become like God. And we really start living. See, this is really what's at the core of what we're beginning today. It's what's called our generosity challenge. I mean, this is really about being people who are living free, who are empowered to be the kind of people that God created us to be. And see, that's why for these next four weeks are going to be so important because here's the deal. I just want us to dream together a little bit. I mean, I just want us to dream a little bit and ask that question, why not here? Why not? Why not us? Why not now? That's what I want to do. And see, here's the thing. These 4 weeks, what they're intended to be, okay, is a way for each of us to challenge each other who consider the orchard, those of us who consider the orchard to be the church home, a way for us to challenge each other to be generous in our lives, radically generous. Now, here's the thing, though. Like, we can say, be generous, and hope that everybody figures out how to be generous, or we can create opportunities for you to be generous. And so there's three areas that we're going to challenge you to be generous in over these next several weeks. One of those areas is we're going to challenge you and each other to be generous in our living, just everyday life. And we're going to challenge each other to live with eyes wide open, ears wide open to needs that are around us. Listen, there are opportunities all over the place and all around you to be generous every single day of your life. And so what would happen if, like, God gave us new lenses and we put these lenses on, we could just see the need. And we live with our eyes open to opportunities to bless someone who's in need. Maybe it's a neighbor who's out of work, and we see an opportunity to buy groceries for them. Or maybe it's someone plowing their driveway, but Lord willing, there'll be no more snow this year. But just let's say there was until next winter. But anyway, you know, I mean, whatever it might be, there's opportunities all around us. And so part of the generosity challenge is to say, look, let's take these next 12 months. Let's take this next year, and let's just live with this radical generosity. The second area we're going to challenge you in is to be generous in your serving. Part of that is serving right here in the Orchard community and helping us to create amazing environments for all the people. I mean, there are still some empty seats in this room. There were empty seats in the 9 o'clock. There were empty seats in the 5 o'clock. You know what that tells me? That's me. And there are still people outside these doors that need to be reached, the good news of Jesus. And so we got to keep working. We got to keep creating great environments for people to come to know God, safe environments. So people, no matter where they're at in their spiritual journey, they can walk in. They may not agree with everything. They might not like the pastor all that much, but they can make sense of it. And they know this is a place that they can take steps forward in their spiritual journey. And the other thing is, we're going to challenge you not just to serve in the church. We're going to challenge you to serve outside of the church. In fact, we're going to be giving you some very tangible ways to reach out and really make an impact right here in our city. But here's the last thing, because this is not just about making and making strides and being generous in our time or in our talent. It's also about being generous when it comes to that one thing that we oftentimes hold on to so tightly, our treasures. And so we're going to challenge you to be generous in your giving. giving of your money, of your resources, okay? And over these next couple of weeks, what we're going to do is we're going to be sharing with you some very specific steps of faith we feel like God is calling us to make as a church. Now, one of those is right here in our church community. There's so much more we have to do. I mean, one of the things we know we have to do is we have to continue to shape and create spaces right here on our campus for God to do some unique things. Here's what we realize. What worked 2 years ago isn't going to work 2 years from now, right? And one of the things we know is that if you're going to reach people who've never been reached before, you've got to do things you've never done before. And so we know we got a long ways to go. We got a lot of work to do right here in the Orchard. We also want to make huge headway into the areas of our families. Man, I tell you what, one of the things we know is that we have to help empower you as parents. I feel it, you feel it, and so we have this dream of empowering parents to be the spiritual leaders in their households. I mean, listen, let me just say this. Our goal has never been to be the spiritual hero to your children. The church should not be the spiritual hero. Parents, you should be the spiritual hero in your kids' lives. That is your responsibility. And so we know, though, that if you're like me, oftentimes you go, well, what does that mean, right? How do we do that? Well, we want to help you do better at that. We want to equip, we want to empower students, junior high, senior high, nursery, I mean, all ages, so that they can become the people God's created them to become, okay? Another thing is we want to take great steps of faith in our city, because here's what I know, okay? Not everyone that we're called to reach is going to walk through these doors, okay? And I know this is hard to believe, but not everyone's going to come in and like this. Not everyone's going to come in, and it's even harder to believe, not everyone's going to come in here and like me. I know, don't argue, it's just the truth, right? But here's the thing. We still have a responsibility to reach a lot of people. And so we're dreaming of ways right now that we could take the heartbeat of what's happening in here, not the style, not the exact feel, but how do we take the DNA, how do we take the culture, how do we take the heartbeat of what happens in here each weekend out these doors and into some of the most needful areas of our city? And so we're going to share more of that with you as well. And then you'll hear more about all of this. But then here's what's going to happen. At the end of these 4 weeks, listen to me. At the end of these 4 weeks, I'm going to stand up here and I'm going to challenge you. And I'm going to ask you to make a tangible commitment to being generous in your living, to be generous in your serving here and outside, and to be generous in your giving. And here's the cool thing. We really, really believe that this is going to make a huge impact in our hearts. We believe that there are going to be stories that emerge from this that are going to be unlike anything we've ever seen before. And so this last few weeks, we've actually purchased a website domain called generositychallenge.com. And we're going to create a website that's going to allow us over this next year to share our stories of what's happening in our lives. We're going to create a website where you can read other people's stories, where you can share your own stories, where you can find ways to be generous in our community, in our city, to be generous within the Orchard. And so I'm excited because this is going to be one of those things. And let me say it this way. I think one of the reasons I'm so excited is because this is a church community that already really gets this great concept of generosity. You get it. I mean, generosity is not a foreign concept for the Orchard. In fact, if you're new here, if you're just visiting, or you've only been here a few times, let me just tell you something. You're gonna find out right away that this place is full of people who are unbelievably generous. I'm telling you, if you could look back over the last 4, 5 years, 6 years, or hey, let's say even these last 12 months. Heck, let's go even shorter. Last 4 months. Do you realize, listen to this, the fact that right now, this is amazing, right now there are almost 250 children all around the world who every day are being fed, who are being cared for, who are being loved, and they're being taught about Jesus every day because of this church community. 250 children. Now, let me tell you something. You know what that equates to? Listen to this. That equates, when we add up what all of you give every single week or every single month to these children that you sponsor, $9,000 a month is going out these doors and out of your pocketbooks and into tangible blessings in these kids' lives. $108,000 a year. Just like that, because you embraced this opportunity to love children that you may never even meet until you get to heaven. I'm telling you, there's a reason why God is doing what he's doing here. there's a reason God is doing what he's doing. And I think it's because, here's what I think. I think it's because this is a church community that really gets it, that really gets and understands that the greatest investment a person can make is in those things that are eternal. I mean, people who really get it, when they hear the words of Jesus, when Jesus said those really uncomfortable words that none of us really like to hear, but when he said, don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth, because that moth and rust, they'll destroy it, thieves will break in and steal it. He said, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Because you've got to worry about moths and rust in heaven. You've got to worry about thieves in heaven, okay? And see, here's the thing. Jesus did not say that just because, well, one day your wealth might get lost or be lost. No. Here's the thing. Wealth will always be lost. Always. It will be lost because it either leaves us while we live or we leave it when we die. Wealth is always lost. And so ultimately what Jesus is saying is, look, the best investment you could ever make is investing in the one thing that you can take into eternity with you. And that is people. People. Man, I'll tell you what, and that's where we truly discover what we've learned today, which is what? Remember, those who give most freely live most fully. Well, I hope you won't miss these next 4 weeks. We're going to be challenged, because look, this is about being at our best. You want to know something? The church is always at its best when it gives of itself. Always. Man, the moment churches become like this, inward focused on just themselves, forget it. But man, when the church starts to look outside, that's when it's at its best. And that's when we see what happened in Acts. That's when we see this something beautiful happen. And I want to just read this to you one last time. Acts 4, verse 32. Keep this in front of you, okay? All the believers were united in heart and mind. And they felt that what they owned was not their own. So they shared everything they had. The apostles testified powerfully to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and God's great blessing was upon them all. May that be so. May that be said of us here, the Orchard community. Would you pray with me? Let's bow our heads. God, there's been this passage that has been in my mind all week, and it's the one in 2 Corinthians in speaking about Jesus where it says, though he was rich, for our sakes he became poor, so that through his poverty we might become rich. Now I don't think that what you're saying there is that Jesus became poor so we could be wealthy, have lots of material possessions and all that stuff, which isn't bad to have those things, but I think what you're showing us there is something so much greater, so much deeper, and I think it's a richness of heart, a richness of soul. And God, here's the thing. You gave us your all. You did not spare anything. You went all the way. You gave your greatest, you gave your best. And so, God, may we be people who give you our all. May we be people who give you our best. And God, thank you for giving us this picture in Acts chapter 4, this beautiful picture of this church that's united in heart and mind, this church that felt that what they owned, it wasn't their own. And so they shared everything they had, and they testified powerfully to the resurrection. And the result was that thing that we need so badly, the result was that your great blessing was upon them all. That's what we want, God, your blessing. God, thank you for this generosity challenge. God, thank you for the opportunities we're going to have to reflect your beauty and your love to those around us. And together, as your people, as your community, we pray these things and we ask them in your son's name. Everyone said, amen.